Stay tuned for Bobby Neart Live, but first, here's our Denver Bible Church update with an excerpt from this week's sermon.
And I've noticed that women come ready to identify with their children. They're just born ready. Young girls come over to our house, and if family comes over with young guys, young girls, kids, the boys want nothing but the trampoline, and the girls will be happy to play with the baby and take care of the baby. It's different the way God made us. But as men get older, they realize, those who mature, that their wives were right all along and how wonderfully precious the children are. And they begin to bond with their children, or quite often they miss that opportunity and they end up bonding with their grandchildren. And so they have this intense emotional love for the grandchildren. But when their kids were being born, well, they were busy working. And there's something about that that's not just negative. There's something about it that results in the way God made us, because Jacob had to provide for his family. He had to go out and with the sheep and the goats and make a living. And when you want nothing more than to hold your baby and to hug it and play with it, it's hard to go out in the morning and leave and go to work. So men have this ability, stronger than women, I think, to compartmentalize their work and then the kids, and we're off to work. But I think because of sin, we take that too far. And so we have fathers who are not involved and not emotionally involved with their children. And so we as Christian dads need to be aware of taking something that we're made with and taking it too far to where it becomes destructive. But in Joseph's case, he was born when his dad already had 10 kids. And so his dad was a bit older. I know this has happened to me with our little ones. Today, we were telling Zachary that he's the oldest of the youngest. He's the biggest of the littlest. And he gets a kick out of hearing that. And so Cheryl and I, we have a second round of kids. And I've noticed it's so much more natural for me to be loving and open emotionally to the little kids than it was toward the big kids. And I also realized that I missed out with the big kids in that regard. But what Jacob did was he loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. And as a result, his brothers really envied Joseph. And that envy, of course, it expressed itself in the most terrible of ways. Well, Jacob had 12 boys, and we have 7 sons. And Cheryl and I, we take to heart the Bible lesson of Jacob's favoritism. We consciously avoid provoking any of our children to envy by favoring one above the others. But at the same time, we don't try to treat them all equally all the time. If you give something to one, you got to give it to all. No, we don't do that. Rather, we teach them not to envy the occasional blessing that another brother may enjoy alone. And I don't want to make excuses for Jacob, but he didn't have his own story in the Bible to read to avoid that problem.
This is Pastor Bob Enyart of Denver Bible Church inviting you to visit us this Sunday. We are at 6200 West Hampton near Hampton and Wadsworth. Come on out. Check us out on the web. You can look at the directions for how to get right to our front door. We're at denverbiblechurch.org on the web, or call us at 303-463-1707. Now stay tuned for Bob Enyart Live.
One warning, and there's truth over here.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyar, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, heterosexual, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number, 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. But for the first part of the show, we rather than take your calls, we are going to speak with a woman, a columnist at WorldNet Daily. Now, WorldNet Daily, for those of you who get on the web but haven't checked it out, it's one of the top 500 websites in the world for news, and it's really a great site. And that's how we've found out about Ilana Mercer. And she wrote a column criticizing, this past week, criticizing George W. Bush and for him leading us to war in Iraq. So I'd like to welcome Ms. Mercer to the program. Hello, Ilana.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Am I saying your name right?
You're saying my name right, and your readers can follow the trail of my columns on my website. That's the easiest way to do that.
Yes.
And that's ilanamercer.com.
Yes, and we've looked that up, and it's a very nice site.
Thanks.
And, Ilana, what I wanted to do, and I believe you've spoken to Ray Graybar, one of our producers.
Yes, he warned me.
Okay. I'd like to debate with you, discuss your stand against, you think it was wrong for George W. Bush to bring us to war in Iraq.
Yes, and I just want to qualify, Bob, that I consider myself the libertarian right, a libertarian of the old right. So, you know, we have these ideological debates nowadays, who is conservative and who isn't.
Right.
And while I loved your introduction, I certainly think that the people in the Bush administration are more neoconservative.
Well, I agree that they are neoconservatives. And once we finish our discussion on Iraq, perhaps we could talk a bit about you being a libertarian.
And what does that mean? My positions are of the old right, a classical liberal of the old right, maybe perhaps a Tuft Republican.
All right, all right. Mm-hmm. And, well, we think the Republican Party is a bit wimpy and not nearly as conservative as it should be. So perhaps there are areas of agreement in our basic philosophies. We'll have to find out. But let's talk about the war first. And Ilana, you and I were both in the media to some degree. I've done a talk show for, 12 years now, five nights a week. You've got a column, and you're on the air also, right?
I just do some regular radio broadcasts with some regular hosts that
yeah.
I have, but I'm certainly not in your league, my dear.
Well,
I've been writing for a while, but I'm new mm-hmm. to America. And I'm relatively new to WorldNet Daily. I've been with them almost for a year and a half. Yeah.
Okay. Well, and from reading a bit of your writings, I think I can tell that you're not a fan of George W. Bush.
No.
I can tell that.
Neither am I a fan of the Democrats. I think they're both quintessential social Democrats.
Well, I think that's reasonably insightful. And I'm not a fan of George W. Bush either. So perhaps this discussion could be especially effective because I was a strong proponent of the war for quite a long time leading up to the war. And let me throw out maybe my first reason why I thought it was good for us to go to war in Iraq. And then you could explain why you think it was wrong. I'll give you one reason. All right. My one reason will come from the New York Times, which was against the war editorially, January 26th, this year, 2003. They wrote that an article, "How Many People Has Saddam Killed?" Saddam is responsible for the death of over 1 million people, according to the New York Times, which I think is a bit liberal. And if we see that a government is responsible for killing over 1 million people, that's 1/6 of the Holocaust. It seems that and that alone justifies any other government that's capable of going in and destroying that government.
But let me throw this at you, Bob. Was that the reason the Bush administration put forward to go to war? Not at all. They veered this way and that way. Look, they made up their mind that they were going to go to war, even though Saddam Hussein was not an imminent danger and had not been since the Gulf War.
Ilana, on the week of 9/11, I was on the air doing a live broadcast while the terrorist attack was still underway. We're trying to make sense of what happened. And on the air, we had said this is most likely, it's not a Palestinian terrorist. It's most likely Osama bin Laden and his al-Qaeda network. And we called for that week. I got to do a seminar in Indiana. We had to drive there because the planes were down. And we called for a number of things that had to happen in our government, foreign policy and domestic policy, as to address this terrorist attack. And one of the things we called for that week was the destruction of Saddam Hussein's government, that we needed to destroy his government.
You mean you were going to launch a preemptive war without any evidence that Saddam Hussein was linked to the 9/11 al-Qaeda, something that has been backed up by our CIA?
Yeah, I have no evidence whatsoever that Saddam or Iraq was involved in the planning of 9/11, and I've never claimed that and don't think that.
Sure.
If he was or if Iraq was, it'll be a surprise to find out how he was.
Well, look, sir.
But wait, Ilana. Saddam Hussein is responsible for the death of over 1 million people. We have justification to go into that country and to destroy his murderous regime.
You know, then my answer to you is that you're far more honest and you're clearly more congruent than President Bush, because that was not his justification.
Okay, well, now, wait a second. Before weapons of mass destruction became the big issue in the Security Council, a year before, Bush talked about regime change. We needed regime change in Iraq. And the reason weapons of mass destruction became so big was because of the politics at the UN. That was the one issue that could get the Security Council to unanimously condemn Saddam, because unanimously China, Russia, the UN, they agreed with America that Iraq had and was hiding weapons of mass destruction.
Well, I would dispute that, sir. I certainly think that the United Nations, and of course I'm no fan of the United Nations, but as I say in my column, that was not the logical thing to do, was not to veer into a red herring discussion about the validity of the United Nations, which is nil. The point was that the United Nations said...
Ilana, please hold on a second. We're going to heartbreak. We'll get right back to you. It's a live commercial break right here, Bob Enyart, listener-supported radio. Hey, we've been on the air with you guys out there in the audience since 1991, five nights a week, live talk radio. And I want to thank you for all the time you spent tuning in, calling, the lively debates. And I want to invite you to our website, kgov.com, kgov.com, where we archive these programs indefinitely. So you can, if you miss a program, if you heard about a show that, well, the debate going on that we've talked about the last two nights, that'll go on for the next couple weeks, the debate on the question of, does God exist? Is there a God? That debate, if you've missed the beginning of it, you might want to go to the internet at kgov.com and check out those programs archived, as they all are. And you might get addicted, because it is addicting. It's a lot of fun. And so once again, that website is KGOV, KGOV.com. People ask, why is it KGOV? Why Gov? Radio stations, TV stations are licensed by the FCC with call letters that begin with a W if you're east of the Mississippi and a K if you're west of the Mississippi. And we've got our internet radio station going, KGOV.com. In fact, we launched this website when, back in 1999, we went to auction in Hollywood, and we purchased O.J. Simpson's memorabilia, his Hall of Fame award, his jerseys, and we burned them on the steps of the L.A. courthouse the next day in order to help us launch this website, where we talk through the issues of the day, governmental policy, what should the government do, what should it not. So tune in to KGOV.com. All right, this is Bob Enyart, and we are talking to Ilana Mercer, whose columns you could find at WorldNet Daily, worldnetdaily.com, or check out our website at ilanamercer.com. And I gave Ilana, to recap so far, the justification we had to go into Iraq and destroy its government, because according to the New York Times, Saddam is responsible for the death of over 1 million people, and there's nothing beyond that that's required to justify one country destroying the government of another country. So, Ilana, go ahead.
Yeah, and I haven't yet answered that that question. I think it's very important to address. And as I say in my column, this has become the justification of last resort. And at least you are honest to have begun with this justification. But, you know, there is absolutely no warrant in the U.S. Constitution for the President of the United States to launch a war in order to liberate people from brutal regimes. Unless, of course, my friend, you join your liberal foes in adopting that odious doctrine of a living constitution. The conservatives.
No, I'll go with you. Let's. I'm not going to support a living constitution. So that you think, let's say we were in the 1940s, and a few million people in Europe were begging us to help stop the Nazi machine, and. You are saying that it would have been wrong for us to go and declare war against Nazi Germany and do what we could to stop the Holocaust. We had to wait for a justification?
Bob, that's a very smart argument, and I think we have to be accurate, and we have to go with President Bush's reason for launching the war, not for yours.
Well, I did.
Albeit the fact that you might,
Ilana,
have more integrity than he.
All right, tell me if this is wrong. Tell the audience if this is wrong.
Just finish my thought there. Well, it's important to note that the massacres that they are now unraveling is. And the reasoning that they are now saying that we had the reason to go in there because Saddam was a mass murderer is post hoc. It's reasoning backwards,
okay,
right?
Okay, Ilana,
those,
I responded
those
to...
Those murders happened on our watch.
Okay, respond to this point. I already responded to your argument. I said before weapons of mass destruction became a big issue, mm-hmm. George W. Bush was on record saying we need regime change in Iraq. That was before we used the weapons of mass destruction because it was a political tool in the Security Council. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think we were wrong in suspecting that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction? Do you think we were wrong?
I haven't even answered the previous question.
Okay, what is it? I'll answer.
Can I do that?
Yeah, go ahead.
We were speaking about Second World War, and I think that certainly there was reason to go to the aid of our allies in on the continent, right? Hitler was certainly an imminent danger. There was some reason for
war. To America?
Saddam had not posed a danger for 12 years. What President Bush did was commandeer the pre-Gulf War narrative and apply all the dangers that Saddam posed then to its neighbors, you know, to the current situation, which was very disingenuous.
Okay, so if you're saying that Iraq was not a threat to us.
Definitely not. I think anyone would agree with that.
Okay, I imply from that you think that Iraq did not have weapons of mass destruction and was not supporting terrorism in the world. You must think both of those things.
I think we have to reason more carefully. You know, in my columns, and I think your listeners can see that on my website under War and Terrorism, I document with detail the dynamics leading up to the war and the lies, the embedded journalism, which began from the get-go, from September.
Ilana,
you had the build-up and the...
All right. Well, could you answer these two questions? Do you think that it was reasonable for us to assume that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction the day before the war broke out? And do you think... I'm asking you to answer these two questions. Do you think it was reasonable for us to assume it? And do you think Iraq was supporting terrorism?
Well, first, to your first pronged question, the first part of your question, I document very well that there was no reason to assume. And even if we did assume, we had the mechanisms in place to you don't launch wars based on assumptions.
Okay, now, all right, hold on.
That defies every precept of just war theory, developed by the great Christian minds like Thomas Centocinus and George
I'd like to – all right, Ilana, I'd like to talk through both these issues and first get your answer. So you said you don't think there was reason for us to believe they had weapons of mass destruction.
Absolutely
and,
not.
Let's not talk about it yet. Let's get your answer to the second question. Do you think it was reasonable for us to think that Iraq was supporting terrorism the day before the war? The year
was
before
it supporting
the war.
Al-Qaeda? Let's be
no,
very
not
specific.
Al-Qaeda. Islamic terrorism.
Islamic terrorism?
Yes. Do you
Let's
think...
be very specific. It was not supporting Al-Qaeda.
Do you think they were supporting Islamic terrorism?
Well, you know,
yes
there's
or no.
some evidence that it was sending checks to Israel. Do we launch... I'm a Jew, and I'm an Israeli, a proud one. Do we launch wars on behalf of Israel? I say no.
Ilana, okay, I'm not trying to talk through these issues first. I'm trying to just get your answers. So I think you just answered that, yes, there was evidence that Saddam was supporting Islamic terrorism before the war. Was that your answer, or no, there's no evidence?
No, I said that there was some evidence that he was sending checks to families of suicide
okay,
bombers
okay, let me
in
ask
Israel.
The question again, if you can, a yes or a no.
I'll be very specific. I don't make broad statements.
Okay, well, do you
so
think...
I'll stand by my statements, dear.
All right, do you think there was evidence before the war that Saddam was supporting Islamic terrorism, yes or no?
Fundamentalist Islamic terrorism, as in Al-Qaeda, no.
So no support for Islamic terrorism by Iraq...
not according to the evidence I've seen,
okay.
No.
Okay, all right. So now let's talk through those two issues.
Certainly not the evidence the CIA presented.
Ilana, now I want to talk through those two issues because I think I could be persuasive that there was very good reason to believe that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Let me give you real quickly a few bullets, and you could say whether they're right or wrong, okay? Here's my argument that they had weapons of mass destruction. In the 1980s, they used them to kill Iranians. In 1991, they killed thousands of their own people with weapons of mass destruction, chemical weapons. In 1998, after his son-in-law had defected and told us in detail, then the Iraqi government, they itemized tons of weapons of mass destruction, a half a dozen different kinds of biological and chemical weapons. You recall
that?
You
know that there's debate whether what constitutes weapons of mass.
Well, I understand, but if you have Scud missiles, if you have a couple hundred missiles with chemical and biological weapons in the warheads, then that's what we're talking about. In Iraq, Saddam itemized those tons of weapons of mass destruction. Tons, many tons.
And there were many experts, my friend, who said that he had been. I agree with you about the early period.
So that's up to 1998. That's not too early.
Well, you know, there were many experts outside the Bush administration, which clearly was motivated, not exactly nobly, that said that he had 95% been disarmed.
Well, now,
and it seems like that evidence is
All right, Ilana, you're racing ahead. I'm going historically, step by step, to find out where did we have reason to believe the weapons were gone. So in 1998...
We also, my friend, have to address principles. With all the doubts in the world, the anti-war bloc on the right, that is paleoconservatives like myself or paleolibertarians, hedged our statements. We said it is possible, but so far he's not poised to attack. We do have the mechanisms to check him.
All right, Ilana.
And let's not rush into war.
Okay,
right?
Ilana, that you may want to make that argument, but mm-hmm. that's different from my question to you. Mm-hmm. Did we have reason to believe Iraq had weapons of mass destruction before the war started? You said no. Now I'm giving you bullet by bullet historical evidence, and at some point you're going to have to say, well, that's where, at that point, we believe they were all gone. Okay,
yes,
so we came up.
I've tried to say that.
Let me go a little bit more. In 1998, Saddam Hussein admitted having tons of biological and chemical weapons, and
he
apparently
did. I haven't seen that evidence. I would have to see it. I can't take your word, my
Well,
dear.
It's oh, you, Ilana.
Yes.
That's been widely reported in all the press and
you
all
know,
the world.
I am very careful with it with the inferences that I draw from data, right? And if you read my columns, you know. Persistent and consistent on the war, I have based them on the documents that I've seen. I don't make wild inferences. Whatever I see, primary documents, basically.
All right.
Not the type that
so you... So would it be primary enough in Iraq's full, final, and complete disclosures mm-hmm. in their own documents of 30,000 pages when they list 200 airdrop bombs with biological warheads? And when they list, you could go to CNN.com.
Where is it, my friend? Where is all that stuff?
So you're saying in 1998, when Iraq declared they had tons of biological and chemical weapons, you're saying you don't believe Saddam, you think he was lying?
In his latest report, he seemed to have been telling the truth. You know, I come
Wait. I want to stick on that. In 1998...
You need to let me answer. Latest report...
I don't want to know. Hey, Ilana, please. In 1998, when Iraq declared they had tons of biological and chemical weapons...
I haven't seen that report.
Well, then, you haven't looked. It's on CNN.com. Just go to CNN.com.
Well, I've read through the documents on the government, on the CIA and the FBI, and there was always hedging statements. Iraq could possibly, foreseeably, might. I didn't see anything, and I've seen...
Well, let me urge you to do this, Ilana. Let me urge you to search on the web for Iraq's own declaration, because after, let me remind you of the story.
You know, my friend, we're missing principles. We're discussing.
No, we're talking about a matter of fact that you said we had no reason to believe they had weapons of mass destruction. Now, if you want to pull back from that.
But you need to let me answer, surely.
If you want to say, okay, there probably were reasons, but I still think the war was wrong, even though we may have had good reasons to believe they had weapons of mass destruction.
Well, let me give you my answer. I think that Saddam Hussein was most probably 95% disarmed by 98 or towards 2000.
Okay,
and certainly the weapons inspection reports show that they scoured as many facilities as we have scoured and did not find anything. So, yes, I think that he was just about disarmed, and I'll stand by that.
Okay, and UNSCUM said that in Iraq's full and final complete disclosures, according to UNSCUM, they were anything but complete, and they could not find evidence that these many tons of biological and chemical weapons had been destroyed. That's according to the United Nations.
You must also remember that a lot of them would be inert because these would be very old.
All right. Now, we need to go to a commercial break. Could you join us for one last segment?
I actually have to run.
All right. Thank you, Ilana. And we will be right back after this.
Thanks so much.
IlanaMercer.com. You could read her columns at worldnewsdaily.com. This is Bob Benyart. We'll be right back. Bob Enyard here. Hello to those of you on the internet. Hey, we're going to have to, this is a live commercial break. And we're going to have to talk about this when we get back on the air. But Ilana Mercer, I think she copped out. I absolutely think she copped out. I'll want to know what you think. You can call in tonight's show or a subsequent show to tell us what you think at 1-800-8-NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278. Listener-supported radio right here, Bob Enyart Live. Hey, the phone number that you can use to call in fact, if you'd like to tell us, this is a live commercial break right now. If you'd like to tell us what you thought of Ilana Mercer's, of that brief interview, we've got a little bit of time, so call us up at 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278. And this will be, it'll be interesting to think through how that just went. And what a shame we didn't have a chance to get to some of our other topics. But at any rate, since this is a live commercial break, I should be telling you about our materials. Hey, if you study the Bible, if you know the Bible, then when issues come up, you're prepared to speak the truth, to understand the truth, and to persuade people of the truth at times. If you know the truth, you understand why, you're confident, then during the course of your life, you'll have more opportunity to share the truth with others. And that's what studying the Bible is all about. The Bible is the Word of God. And here at Bob Enyart Live, one of the things that motivates us is studying and teaching the Scriptures. And so we have a manuscript called The Plot, an overview of the whole Bible. And it is a lot of fun, 330 pages. We have The Plot on audio tape albums, or on MP3 CD-ROM. So you could pop in one CD, listen to 5.5 hours of Bible study. It's fun, so give us a call. All right, Bob Enyart here, 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. I'm a bit disappointed in Ilana Mercer. A bit disappointed. Perhaps our producer, Ray, will try to get her back on the air next week to finish our debate. But I think I noticed a tactic that's typically used by someone who's losing a debate or an argument, that she wanted to change the topic. I asked her, was there reason for us to believe they had weapons of mass destruction there? And she said no. And then I asked her if there was evidence that they were supporting Islamic terrorism. She said no. So I want to talk about both those issues. Because if the New York Times says Saddam is responsible for the deaths of 1 million people, then, and George W. Bush said we need regime change in Iraq and identified them as part of the axis of evil. You know, an axis has to have three countries. So we had Iraq, Iran, and North Korea. Well, then, and then there was the axis of not quite as evil, which was made up of France and Syria and but anyway, I was a bit disappointed that when we're trying to itemize the evidence of Iraq's weapons of mass destruction, she wanted to change the topic and say, you know, well, even if he did have them, we were still, well, yeah, but we're just discussing whether we're discussing your view of the facts, Ilana. Let's talk about the facts. Did Saddam have, was there good reason to believe Iraq had weapons of mass destruction? And even France voted when they supported the the last UN resolution on Iraq, that even France said the evidence was that they had not destroyed their weapons of mass destruction, the weapons they admitted to having. And so did Russia. And so did China. It was unanimous on the Security Council. So if sometime between October of 2002 and the war breaking out, and when did the war start? In March? Maybe during that time, Saddam got rid of all his weapons of mass destruction and did it secretly with no evidence? I mean, that's a bit hard to believe, and that doesn't sound like, well, George Bush is lying, and that's why France and Russia. No. So what I wanted to get to, oh, and that the evidence Iraq supported Islamic terrorism is extremely clear, and that he used terrorists in 1993 to try to kill a former U.S. president. So I wanted to ask her then, I wanted to ask Ilana, which is stronger in you? Which is stronger, your dislike of George W. Bush or your love for the Iraqi people? Which is stronger? Because she has a visceral hatred for Bush. And I'm not a big fan of George W. Bush's, but I have a love for all people in the world, and the Iraqi people don't deserve to live under that murderous tyrant. And so I think I'm able to look at the evidence and say, yes, it's right for us to destroy Saddam's government. But I think Ilana was not able to separate herself from her hatred of George W. Bush to weigh the evidence in Iraq carefully. Let's go to Denver, Colorado, 1-800-836-9278. Elizabeth, speak your mind.
Well, who is Ilana anyway?
Well, she's a columnist on a very popular website, WorldNet Daily. And what is her background?
No, I mean, you know, what's her qualification to make specific assumption or whatever she displayed? I came in on the last part of her I did get some. My question here is,
yeah.
Is Iraq better off now? That's to you. That's. I hope Ilana is
listening. All right. Is Iraq
Better off now?
Iraq is better off in that their murderous regime has been obliterated. Their standard of living of the Iraqi people may have gone down. But that's not relevant in the equation of whether or not it was good or right to destroy Saddam.
Why is not relevant? I mean, you know, human misery.
All right, let me explain. Let me explain it to you.
It can be as destructive.
All right, let me explain to you. If you have an evil tyrannical dictator who's murdering people systematically, raping women, murdering his enemies. And he has an iron grip on the country, on the government. It's right to destroy his government. It's right to destroy him, even if that brings hardship on the people under him. It's right. If you have a father,
It's a question here of what we distinguish between the act of saving the Iraqi people as a nation. I think we have put them back in the Stone Age.
But that's worth it. That's a worthwhile price, Elizabeth. If Germany was under Hitler and they were economically prospering under Hitler as compared to what had happened before. Mm-hmm. But just because Germany is going to be dealt a horrendous economic blow by being defeated doesn't mean then we have to weigh. Well, should we destroy Hitler? What will the damage be to the economic infrastructure in Germany? You don't weigh that. You don't weigh it that way. When you have a murderous government.
Another point.
Go ahead.
We are talking about now a change of regime in Iran. Are we going to go the same route as we did in Iraq?
That would be great if we did. I doubt we will.
That would be great.
It would be wonderful.
Oh.
Only this time we should, you know, you learn each time you go, especially when you have a war. Right. And we need to be more prepared for the immediate aftermath of the war, which I think we would be. You see, when a government is a terrorist-supporting criminal government in that sense, then that government does not have the right to have nuclear weapons. When you, if you're a criminal and you're a threat to your neighbors, you don't have the right to build nuclear weapons. We could stop you by force from doing that. So that
you
if,
know,
in go
this
ahead.
Country, in this country, I'm going to take you to a smaller example.
Yeah.
In this country, when a father strikes a child, in terms of
discipline,
to discipline him. And he is responsible to discipline his kids, and I'm not saying that always the parents do the right thing. We come in and we tell the father, you don't have the right to strike the kids.
Well, we're wrong when we say that.
And that's, we are wrong.
That's why a lot of kids are messed up, because they're not spanked by loving parents.
Uh-huh. So, not, you know, this is too far...
Elizabeth,
I think to compare, but
let me ask you a question, Elizabeth.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't like to see what's happening and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But wasn't there a way where we could have resolved it without having innocent people die? Whether they're
well, the answer is no, and it doesn't matter anyway.
Well, how old are you? I hope you live to see. And me and everybody in the world entire in its entirety, that that how long it's going to take to have the Iraqis get back on their feet.
Elizabeth,
or maybe
Elizabeth.
The aggression, let me finish my point.
Oh, well, we, I understand your point.
The aggression that had been witnessed by these young people will hold a memory, and they in their own turn... grow up to be aggressive like their leader who we tried to eliminate.
Okay, well, let me ask you a couple questions real quickly.
Sure.
When we decimated Japan in World War II, their military, did Japan then grow up to be violent or to hate us? Mm-hmm. Over the next half a century, did Japan become violent?
But, you know, let me tell you something. What's the difference between Japan and the Arab world?
Well, I understand.
There was the oil there.
Elizabeth.
And the oil. Let me. You want me to call you?
I just put Elizabeth on hold. Elizabeth, if I want to stop you or ask you to address a point, then you have to do that. All right? Because this is a talk show you've called in. So I'm going to bring you back. Go ahead, Elizabeth. All right. You there?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Elizabeth.
See, sometimes we have a trend of thought. It's not like we're being aggressive to speak over you. It's just a trend of thought that we are following. See, the Arab world has a basic problem that no other, and I hope you listen because that is really the basic thing, that is creates the Middle East as a point of terrible ongoing. They have the oil, okay? And these people have not been able to use their revenue in the proper way. And I'm going to take it a little further beyond, because the problem is not just Iraq. The problem is more Saudi Arabia also.
All right.
It's all oil.
Elizabeth, you
the
brought...
The people that are over there...
Elizabeth, let me interrupt you.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, you brought up now another topic, and what I prefer...
Not another topic. This is the root
I prefer
of the
to stick on one topic, but now I'll go with you to... This is now the fourth topic. So let me ask you a question. You're right. The Arab world has not used their oil revenues effectively. And so there's pretty much misery in their countries economically.
Due to what?
Why? That's what I'm going
to
ask you.
What keeps the economic hold of the world, whether it's France, whether it's anybody needs oil. And these people have not really gone to manage their own resources.
Okay, Elizabeth, I want to ask you a question. What keeps the population of a nation or a region down economically? What causes
that? Every time they raise their head above the ground, somebody comes in and hit them.
So you think it's not their fault at all, it's other people's fault?
No.
Is that what you're saying?
You know, sometimes, like in your case, for instance, you may be economically inclined. You may be a carpenter. Maybe you like to work with your hand. That part of the world, if they have been gifted by their natural resources, somewhere, somehow, somebody is dealing with them, even him, himself, you know, their leader, in a negative way. Has there been a good hand that handled all of this all these years?
All right.
Then they could have used these resources, but these people are smart. They're not probably oil producing.
All right, Elizabeth.
Know-how.
Elizabeth, you touched on it, but let me tell you clearly what keeps a whole society in poverty.
Mm.
What keeps a society in poverty is broken government and broken religion. Those two things destroy the ability of individuals to prosper. And so to some degree or other, if a society has bad government or a bad worldview, then people will suffer. And the better the government and the better the worldview of the masses, then the people will prosper. And so the Arab world is suffering because they have broken government, broken laws, and broken religion, a broken worldview.
Well, you know, when we say the Arab world, that's a total mouthful. There are other Arab world that you would love to live their way. You know, it is not all money.
Are you changing, Elizabeth? I'm going to go because you're changing the topic a fifth time.
Yeah,
and it's too hard.
A topic has many roots.
Elizabeth, I really wanted to talk about the issue with you, and every time I press you, you go in a different direction.
Well, you know, because a problem, its source begins from many avenues.
Okay, well, let me bring you back.
Tackle those avenues,
all right, Elizabeth,
you're not going to resolve the
let
problem.
Me bring you back to the beginning of our conversation. And
yes.
If you stick on that point, we could go with it for I'll keep the other caller on hold.
Okay, let's go on.
Okay, here's the beginning. We were talking about the whether it's right to destroy a murderous government, even if the people will suffer economically.
Uh-huh.
And there are two laws at play there. Thou shalt not murder and thou shalt not steal. And
but what did we do? We murder too.
Elizabeth, wait, please. Of those two laws, murder and stealing, murder takes precedence. It's way greater. And stealing affects someone's financial and economic well-being, and it's a serious crime, but it's not as serious as murder because your economic well-being is not as serious as your life. So that when a government is murdering its own people by the tens of thousands, then even if that country will pay a great economic price for deliverance, it's always worthwhile to be delivered from a murderous government. Always.
Well, let me close it by saying one thing. Now that the war has been done and there's no way to retreat back to it, let's hope we can put a good mechanism in good faith, whereby we'll do better and resolve into a good destiny for those people.
All right, Elizabeth, I'm going to ask you to respond directly to a couple statements.
Sure.
Is murder a higher precedent than stealing?
One is the cousin of the other, I guess. It depends on how many you hurt. If stealing
if you steal from one person or you murder that one person, which crime is greater?
Murder. Of course murder is.
Okay. So that if a government is murdering its own people systematically, if you weigh that with the economic well-being of the people, which is more significant? The government that's systematically murdering its people or the economic well-being of those same people? Which is more significant?
one is worse than the other, and I'll tell you.
Yeah, and that's what I'm asking you. Which is worse than the other?
Well, it's always, to me, it's always murder, because economic could be you know, people can work.
Okay,
people
can
have some charity.
Elizabeth,
but when you murder somebody, you take life out of him. Life is more precious than any economic standard.
Right, so that if we find out that Adolf Hitler is slaughtering people systematically, then we don't really have to think and weigh, well, what is the economic cost to Germany if we destroy his government? I mean, that's it's an issue, it's important, but it doesn't come into the decision.
Because yeah, but who has the right really to come in and topple something?
Other country in the world, if your government begins murdering its own people or its neighbors unjustly, then any other country in the world has the right to go in to topple your government. That's called loving your neighbor.
Loving your neighbor?
To love your neighbor is to destroy the Nazis. America was guilty of not loving our neighbor when we waited so long to go and destroy the Nazis.
Yeah, I guess in those days. But, you know, worship at present time now has many different. We war differently today. And you're talking about how the almighty America, American power, and a little envelope of Amtrak put us at in a tizzy. So it's not a power really of who is mighty and who is. The war issue right now is a lot different than it was during the other days.
Yeah, but the moral principles haven't changed at all.
Yeah, I guess. You know, the whole scenario need a lot to be repaired by negotiation, by diplomacy, by whatever you want to call it. I don't think we're able to, because the web is wide, the human needs, human technology have reached all heights and momentum.
But Elizabeth, Elizabeth,
I don't know. Do we have the answer?
Elizabeth, none of
that.
Elizabeth, please let me interrupt you. Elizabeth,
huh?
Elizabeth, none of that is a factor on the moral issue of destroying a government which murders its own people. Those are not factors.
You know what I'm trying to say right now is the war is said and done. There is no need to waste our energy on wondering whether it was right or wrong.
Of course there is.
What we need to do
because
is
there will be
resolving
all right.
And making it better.
Elizabeth, there will be another war, and if we're confused about what makes a war right and wrong, then we're in big trouble. Let me, as we go, we got to go here, but if you'd like, I'll give you a quick assessment of where I think you're at in your life.
Yeah.
Would you like that?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Assessment of me?
Yes.
What do I come to the scene for with?
I'd like to, if you'd like, I'll give you an assessment of where I think you're at in your life.
Go ahead.
Okay, I think you're very weak on moral principles.
Moral principles?
Moral principles, I think you're very weak, and you obscure morality by pragmatics and what you think is practical.
Let me give you the same.
No,
let me give you the same.
Go ahead, and then I got to go.
I think you are proposing some know-how on your part, and that is terribly arrogant.
Okay, thank you, Elizabeth, for your call. Please call in again. And, well, we're going to take another call here. But, Elizabeth, I think that she obscures morality. She doesn't think through morality. She obscures it with pragmatics and issues that are secondary to basic things like murder. And I wanted to ask her. She wanted to get right back at me. And, you know, that's understandable. Human beings do that. But I wanted to ask her, why does she think she values morality lower than pragmatics? Why? And here's a guess. some people don't like moral clarity. They don't like moral clarity. They feel more comfortable thinking that everything is gray. And things are gray. And if you have a murderous regime, well, we have to weigh the economic impact. And we have to weigh the kinds of technology that's in the world today. And we have to know if you have a government that is raping women systematically and torturing children systematically and has murdered over 1 million people, responsible for the deaths of over 1 million people, then it's a really good idea if you're a neighbor to stop it. And that's the moral issue. Let's go to the phones in Aurora, Colorado. K-Man, speak your mind.
Amen, my brother. You know what? I enjoy your... if she was to define you as being maybe arrogant, thank you for your arrogance, my brother.
Well, thank you, K-Man. Appreciate that.
Hey, man, could I please get a warning? Because I'm going to have to quote a Bible.
Warning, Will Robinson, their Bible verse up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we here at Bob and Your Live know that you would like to censor anyone who dare quote a Bible verse in public. This warning gives you fair notice. Raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. Go ahead, K-Man.
Thank you, my brother. Psalms 82, God stands in the congregation, of the mighty, he judges among the gods. How long will you judge unjustly and accept the persons of the wicked? Selah, defend the poor and the fatherless, do justice to the afflicted and needy. Deliver the poor and needy, rid them out of the hand of the wicked. They know not, neither will they understand. They walk on in darkness, all the foundations of the earth are out of course. I have said, ye are gods, and all you are children of the Most High. But ye shall die like men and fall like one of the princes. Arise, O God, judge the earth, for thou shalt inherit all nations. The significance of this is right here. It doesn't say a whatever nationality. It doesn't say a whatever. It says that literally that the foundation are out of course when there's not justice, righteous justice, sir. And so we not only had or should have gone into Iraq, we had a moral obligation in the case of having an opportunity to do so, to go in Iraq and not only free the people, but to keep them from spreading out their lousy, evil terrorism, not only in Israel, but they're doing it all throughout the world because they've done it with us.
Hey, K-Man, preach it, brother. I mean, hey, K-Man, you're right. Saddam Hussein, he gave aid and comfort to Abu Nidal. Terrorist group broke off from the PLO and killed Americans, attacked the Pan Am jet, and injured 900 people. And in 1998, Saddam allowed Abu Nidal to take up headquarters in Baghdad.
That's right.
Also, he funded, $20,000 to the family of to the estate of every suicide bomber in Israel?
That's right.
That's buying Islamic terrorism. So, and we are at war against Islamic terrorism, and it's naive to think we were only at war against Al Qaeda. That's naive. It's Islamic terrorism.
That's right.
K-Man, thank you. Appreciate your call.
Thank you, my brother. Big nine Sanjis, amen.
I'm not sure what you just said, but.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said it pretty quick. Be ignited and excited in Jesus. And if people think that the Word of God is invalidated for now, Zechariah 12.
You said all that, K-Man, you said all that quickly?
That's right.
All right. Well, amen. God bless you, K-Man. And for those of you who tuned in, hey, we're looking forward to the next post of the atheist, Zakith, on theologyonline.com. Theologyonline.com, where the Battle Royale 7, is underway. The atheist made the first post. We have 10 rounds, and I replied, so round one is over, and we're getting ready for round two. This is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.